There is a case coming out of New York, and this is in my wheelhouse. So whenever I see these cases, I go, whoa, and I get really connected to them, not as a plaintiff or defendant, thank goodness, but just the interest level. So there's a lesbian couple who go to an IVF clinic, they had asked for the sperm donation. One of the couple had an egg that was fertilized and implanted, and they asked for a female embryo, ended up having a baby boy. And they are suing the clinic, the mistake they made. And it was, here are the reasons they said. First of all, negligence, which is true, by the way. And the reason they didn't want a baby boy is because one of the women had been traumatized from being sexually assaulted on two different occasions. And we didn't want to have a boy because of the assaults and because of the socialization of boys, constant socialization of what it means to be a real man. I mean, yeah, that sounds like the kind of parent I would want. You think whatever I get is fantastic, but they don't think that way. So I love their names. Heather Wilhelm Rottenberg and her wife Robin Rottenberg Wilhelm wanted the girl. You can't beat that. You can't write that stuff. And they claim they went to CNY Fertility Center in Latham, New York, which they did, and they were told it's not a problem to determine the boy's sex before the embryo is transferred, which is absolutely true. I mean, you can tell literally whether it's male or female with 100% accuracy by testing the embryo, actually taking in a blastocyst stage when it's at 8 cells. You can actually take one of the cells out and test it for the sex, and then the cell regenerates. It's really fascinating stuff. It's like a salamander when it's an 8-cell stage. And so that was easy to do. They just blew it. And Heather didn't know that it was a boy until she was 15 weeks pregnant when they did an ultrasound and figured out all the parts were there. So they're suing the fertility clinic on 11 counts of breach of contract, medical malpractice, battery. That's the other thing. Is you can be sued for battery when you're doing a medical procedure that is not consented to and not asked. And the argument is we never consented to have a boy embryo implanted. Therefore, it's an assault and battery. I mean, crazy stuff, but that there's the law. So she says, I was so furious, it felt like a deep betrayal. How the F do you mess up that badly? Well, they screwed up. That's why. They messed up something so integral. The fact that there are no legal requirements about these procedures should strike fear in the hearts of all parents using fertility services. You know what? You're not going to have legal requirements that say you can't place a boy embryo in place of a girl embryo by mistake, and there are the procedures. No, you've got malpractice. You've got negligence. You have lack of care, duty of care, although I don't think this is going to fly at all. It's negligence. That's what it is. And the son was born in December of 2020. Heather experiencing postnatal depression after his birth. Yeah, that's going to fly as one of the side effects. Like nobody has postnatal depression. And this is what she said, and this is just striking. The baby is a year and a half now, and I think about the mistake all the time. Come on, really? You've had the kid for a year and a half, and all you think about is the mistake all the time. And then she goes on. He's a lovely kid. He smiles just like Robbie. He has Robbie's dimples. That means it makes it easier. Our son is made of magic. He does things to be funny. He'll use certain tones of voice and laughs to make us crack up. He's hilarious. He's been an easy baby. And if I'm on the jury and I hear her say, I look at the kid and I think about the mistake all the time, she's going to get absolutely nothing. Matter of fact, I'm going to make her pay. Let's take some phone calls. All right. Rhett. Hello, Rhett.
How you doing?
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
My girlfriend basically had an operation and had implants put in about 8 years ago. The same doctor had said that they were faulty. They needed to come out.
What, 8 years later?
About 7 years later.
Okay.
She's been my girlfriend for about 7 years, so we live together. She's Chinese, so there's certain things she has a hard time understanding, and she's from China. certain of the procedures the doctor explained. Like one day after one of the surgeries, she actually drove home from Rancho Cucamonga to Hollywood, 50 miles. They released her without anybody being there to drive her after she was under sedation. I felt like something was wrong with this doctor to begin with, but I didn't say much because he was the original doctor that put the implants in. They gave her a kickback of 25% of what the original implants cost, like $2,600.
What do you mean they gave her a kickback? They wrote her a check for $2,600?
The company that manufactured the implants found that they were faulty.
Oh, and then they just, here's $2,600, and she signs a release?
I don't know exactly what she signed, but they put in new implants. She got the money for that. And after about a month, the implants started to eat away at her skin.
Ooh.
Her skin. And there was actually, I've never seen anything quite like it. The implants ate through her breast.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So after 3 months, I mean, he just kept them in and kept, she went like four times a week. We would drive from Hollywood to Rancho Cucamonga. I mean, probably 6,000 miles in visits. Eventually, they had to come out, but she's disfigured from it.
Oh, my God. Okay, and you want to know...
Like a roadmap.
Right. Yeah, good God.
We talked to a couple of lawyers. It's hard. I've worked with lawyers, but I know I have to have a doctor.
No, you don't have to have a... No. You got that wrong, Rhett. I mean, you do have to have a doctor, but you don't look for the doctor. Your medical malpractice attorney gets the doctor because what is happening right now, based on what you say, Rhett, this is a hell of a case of medical malpractice. And I see two counts, one for each breast. And I'm assuming your girlfriend isn't one of those biological anomalies where there's three breasts. So assuming there are two, you're going to nail the doctor for each one. With that, you simply have to find the right medical malpractice attorney who then will find the doctor, because it's a question of certified. And when the med mal attorney sends her to a doctor, it's the whole thing is not that it's more than just a doctor. It's a doctor who's clearly an expert. I mean, there's no issue as to medical expertise or medical knowledge. It's also all of it is anticipation for litigation. And it's a different kind of approach. The way it's written, the way the case is presented. I mean, all of this is very methodical because the insurance companies are going to fight it every bit of the way. Have you gone to my website, handleonthelaw.com?
No, I'm going to.
Okay, go to handleonthelaw.com. We have some superb medical malpractice attorneys because you're already into that land, Rhett. And based on what you say... the case sounds very strong based on the disfigurement issue. Now the case really goes exponentially up. So visit handleonthelaw.com. I mean, that seems like one hell of a case. I mean, all of it, think about this, is they let her go. There is no place, no time I have been ever involved in or known anybody after any kind of sedation, you're even allowed to get in a car, and they won't let you go. I went to the dentist and got loopy at the dentist. They wouldn't let me out the door, and it's not a Lyft or an Uber. Someone has to be there to take you home. And can you imagine not having that happen after a major surgery? No, none of that makes sense whatsoever. This is Handle on the Law. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Bill. I sold 10 acres of vacant land in Marietta area of Riverside, Western Riverside County, over a year ago. The buyers now want their money back because they say there's a conservation easement on the property, which I did not know about when I sold it. So on the documentation, I did not disclose it.
Okay, so now is it your duty to find all of the easements to pull title? I don't know. But it's certainly recorded, and if they got title insurance, it would have popped up immediately.
Yes, and it did not.
Title company, it did not pop up.
It did not pop up.
Okay, if a title insurance company can't find it, because this is what they do for a living, I don't think you're going to be held responsible. I don't think so. Because even if you looked, it's not there. For some reason, it's not there. How did they find out there was an easement, by the way? Okay, you're cutting out. Let's hold on a sec, Mark. You're cutting out. Let's start from the beginning, or at least from that point. How did they find out there was an easement?
The state, who the easement is now in trust with, drove out to inspect the property to make sure that it was still within the guidelines of the easement.
And they let him know there was... And incidentally, when you talk about an easement, what does the easement consist of?
It's not like a typical utility easement. In this case, it says you cannot take down oak trees and you can't build a structure more than 10,000 square feet or 8,000 square feet or something of that nature.
On the entire... On the entire property?
On the entire property.
Ah, okay. Well, all you can do is go tell them to pound sand. Are you, you're an agent, and I'm assuming you're part of a brokerage organization, right?
No, I'm an individual.
So you have your own broker's license?
No. I sold it through a real estate attorney. I'm through a real estate agent, and they purchased it through their own real estate agent.
Oh, it's a little complicated. Okay, and the buyer did take out, did buy title insurance.
Yes.
Okay, you get sued. You go ahead and your defense is the information just wasn't there. You can't be held responsible. It is not your duty to find easements that don't exist on the books.
Fair enough.
And the only reason I asked for a broker, if there was a broker involved with you, you're not a real estate agent. You're just a person who sold the property, right?
I'm just a person who sold the property.
All right. How much money do they want, by the way?
$250,000 plus damages.
All right. Fine. Let them know that. And then, it's interesting stuff. It really is. But I think you're going to be fine. Now, if they do sue you, you do have to hire a lawyer for that. You've got no choice in that.
Yeah. Yeah, so far I've been dealing with their attorney on my own.
Okay. And you just tell them.
And
if you have to hire a lawyer, you have to hire a lawyer.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. And by the way, there may be in the sales agreement an attorney's fees clause, which
there
says
is.
Whatever party prevails, the other side pays attorney's fees.
Yes.
So all of that means you get to talk to a real estate lawyer. Bobby. Hello, Bobby. Welcome.
Hi, Bill. I'm calling because my mother, her husband died. His father died a year before him. And his property and money was locked up in probate. Well, it was supposed to go to my dad. Then he died 6 months later. So now it's supposed to go to my mother. It turns out that my dad was never adopted by his supposedly stepfather. The family apparently all knew this, but now that it's going to my mother.
Okay, were names specified in the will that it goes to mom and then it goes to Bobby?
No, there was no will. There was no will.
Yeah, you got a problem there because you're not a legal kid, or he's not a legal kid. When you talk about progeny, it has to be legal. You have to actually be the son of, either by adoption or biologically. Yeah, it's going to go to the members of the family that are actually legally members of the family. How much money are we talking about losing here?
About $2 million.
Yee, that hurts. But I would still talk to a trust and estate lawyer, and you can go to handleonthelaw.com to talk to one, because when you're talking about that much money being involved, you know, lawyers just have a way of worming their way. And that's not a negative, by the way. That's not a pejorative term. They have a way of finding those little holes, those chinks in the armor, and opening them and going through them. And that's what a good lawyer does.
Okay. I will definitely reach out to them. One more question pertaining to that. My dad was the legal administrator to his dad's probate estate. Would that change anything?
No, it does. No,
It has nothing to do with who administrates. Effectively, he is simply a paid employee of the probate. Is he allowed to get money? Yes, but just what someone would get in the normal circumstances. It does not change the ownership, and it doesn't change the inheritance.
Okay, this is Handle on the Law.
Hello.
Hello, Carol?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I had an accident.
Congratulations.
I was squished. And one side was a big rig or whatever, and the other side was a car. The big rig was hit and run, and the car pulled over, and the police came. And the insurance company called me and said that they were going to be paid back for starting my rent-a-car, and that the other side was liable. But the guy gave MetLife, and it went out of business, and Farmers took over. And so they just took everything out of my account down to zero.
What do you mean they took everything? Wait. How did they get into your account, Carol?
Well, when I rented the car, I had to give them a debit card for...
And who cleaned out the account?
The rent-a-car company, okay. Enterprise.
That's theft. Whatever. That's theft.
That is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They can't clean out your account. If you owe the money, I don't think they can do that. I don't.
Okay.
A loophole that I'm not paying attention to, but how much was the rental car? Just quickly, the bill.
Well, okay. Geico said they were paying for they were starting it, but that Farmers that took over MetLife was going to be paying it.
Okay, doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. How much was the rental car cost?
I think it was $59 a day or something.
And how long did you have it?
Well, I had it for two months.
It's 60 dollars a day times 60 days. That's $3,600. How much did they take out of your account?
Well, they took it all out of my
account. What is all out of your account? How much did they take?
Down to ground zero and
what? How much money? Did you have $50,000 in the account? Did you have $100,000 that they took out? How much did they take out?
It was my one account that I get $1,400 a month.
How much was in the account that they took out?
Maybe $1,400.
And you owed, and they're saying you owe $3,600 and you gave them your debit card.
More than that, they were just taking 100 at a time.
Okay,
I didn't really notice, but
Carol, you're making me very, you're not answering the question. So we only got another chance here. You say they took $1,400 out. How much did you have in the account?
I was paying my car payment, $387, and my Geico, and that's...
Okay, we're done. Sorry about that. You got to answer the questions. I mean, it's just that simple. Good God. Philip. Hello, Philip.
All right, Bill. I have a question for you. I applied for a business credit card, Wyndham, and I was approved for a $1,000 limit, but they're requesting I mail them a copy of my Social Security card, my driver's license, and a utility bill. Their office is back east. It's Wyndham. And the only reason I want this card is because they put you at a diamond status if you get the card, and then you can status match that to Caesars in Las Vegas.
It's a little complicated. So you have the Wyndham Hotel that's connected to Caesars. Number one, why don't you go to another hotel and see what program they have? They can make whatever terms they want to give you the card. They can say it. You know, I've asked for business cards for my business, and I ask for pretty high numbers because I run everything through a credit card. I had to show 2 years of tax returns, which has my Social Security number on it.
All right.
They can do it.
Do you have to mail it?
You can email it. I don't think they care. And what does it matter if you mail it?
Identity theft. How do I know an employee there won't take my information?
You don't.
Information.
You don't. You don't. So here you go. Then you never send anything in the mail with your information. God forbid you ask the IRS to send you your refund, because how do you know someone's not going to steal the envelope?
Okay.
So ask them if you can do it by email
What you do is you scan it and off it goes.
They said I can fax it.
But then fax it. Well, I don't know where the hell you're going to find a fax machine. But you know what? You go to Kinko if they're still around, or Staples.
Okay, so I should feel okay mailing it or faxing
it. I would. I have no problem. You mail it certified. You mailed it or you mail it registered, or you can send it FedEx overnight. Which if you let them do it ground, not even with a truck, with a camel delivery, it'll cost you $14-15. And you got your choices. I would fax it if they're allowing fax, because that's not going to cost you any money. All right. So you have to have that $1,000. Wow, for a business card. You know, you think there'd be more money than that. I mean, I asked for a ton of money because I had some extraordinary expenses two or three times a year. Man, they made me go through all kinds of hoops. But you do that. That's they can do that. Maria. Hi, Maria. Welcome.
Hey, I had back surgery 5 months ago, and I've been on disability since then. And in the interim, the owner sold the business. Is the new owner obligated to take me back?
No.
So basically, I just wanted to know if my job is protected.
No, jobs are never protected. Unless you have a contract that says you are employed up to this point, you're going to get paid come hell or high water. But other than that, jobs are never protected. Interestingly enough, California being the probably the most liberal state and being probably the most friendly towards employees, renters, people that are injured, it's actually one of the strictest states that exist in terms of protecting your job. Just no, your job isn't protected. It never is. Al. Hello, Al.
Yes. Bill, I have a demand note, Walcott's form 1413. I want to make sure it's still good. It's dated 1996.
Demand note from the bank? From whom?
No, it's somebody gave me this note like in 1996.
Okay, and owes you money, right?
Owes you money, $10,000.
Okay, and here's the problem. Was anything paid since 1996? When was the last payment made, Al?
No payment made. They didn't have money then. Now they have money.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're past the statute, way past the statute. If you're talking 1996, the statute ended at the year 2000. So you're about 23 years too late on this one, 22 years too late.
It's 4 years of the statute.
Yep. That's it.
If they will renew the statute, would that work then?
Well, yeah, if they renew the statute, but they're not going to renew the statute. No, you're out of luck. There is one place where the statute of limitations was renewed, and that has to do with the legislature retroactively renewing the statute of limitations in terms of sexual abuse. Women who are raped or abused or, you know, on any level, and it used to be, let's say it was a 7-year statute. 20 years later, you can still go back and sue because they've extended the statute. And I think they've extended to the point where there is no statute of limitations, which does exist in some cases. Murder, for example, there's no statute of limitations. They can come in, the police can come in 50 years later and arrest you for murder because a DNA kit showed up and there's some kind of connection on the database, the DNA database that the feds have. They're not going to do that in terms of owing money. That ain't ever going to happen. Fran. Hi, Fran.
Hey, we made a will 28 years ago when our only child was born, a will and a living trust. And the only thing that really needs to be changed is we want to make her the executor. Can I download one of those forms from the internet and do an amendment and have a witness?
Yeah, it's a codicil to a will. And and you don't even have to have it notarized. It is part of the will process. What you're doing is changing a provision and simply substituting a name. This is all for people who could contest it, who can attack this, Fran. And that's why you have to be really careful. But yes, changing a name, you have to do it specifically. For example, it basically becomes a new will that supersedes all previous wills. But the internet, those companies will charge you, at worst, $200, maybe $150. So you're going to be fine.
Okay, but I can do it for free by just downloading the codicil, right, and having.
I don't know. on how sophisticated. Okay. I have a trust in a state attorney who just way overcharges me.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, well, it's it happens. Mm-hmm. But first, look on the internet, codicil, and what kind of language you have to use, and do you have to restate? Because a codicil is only literally a page; it's a paragraph.
Right.
Saying, I'm changing the executor from this person to that person. You have the date there, and this supersedes any provision as to names in the previous will. I mean, the language is all there, but I think the answer is yes. That should work.
Perfect.
Yeah. Allison. Hello, Allison.
Hi, Bill.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a Bank of America EDD prepaid debit card that has been compromised by a fraudster who transferred two amounts out of my account, one for $780 and another one for $2,900. Mm. One was settled after 30 days, the one for $780. The one for $29 has been declined. I filed a police report and resubmitted the claim. Now, after a total of 3.5 months later, they concluded their review, and they said that their original decision was correct. No posting error occurred. So based on this information, they will not credit my account and consider this dispute closed. Do you have any suggestions?
That's a tough one, because this is why I hate debit cards. Hate them. On credit cards, you're dealing with their money. On debit cards, you're dealing with your money that's been taken. So I'm going to suggest any account you have doesn't go into a debit card. And any money you have to pay goes out of a credit card. Go ahead.
I agree, but this is an unemployment EDD. So the unemployment money.
Okay, so it goes into your credit card. So it's not a debit card. It's just it's a checking account that it goes into, right?
Well, no, I didn't have a checking account. When I got unemployment, the unemployment development during COVID set up with Bank of America that the unemployment payments would go directly to Bank of America's debit card. I've never had a debit card.
Yeah, well, that's weird. Okay. I didn't know that, but... problem is you got scammed. Someone broke into your account. What did the bank do wrong? And this is the question I would ask. What do you think the bank has done wrong in that one, Allison?
I think that the unemployment development people trusted Bank of America with my money.
Right, but what did the bank do wrong? What did the bank do wrong?
The Bank of America failed. They did not. They did not protect the account.
I understand, but what do you think they should have done to protect the account when someone took your identity, someone took your account number, someone grabbed all the information you had? Clearly, someone grabbed your stuff. What did the bank do wrong? And how would they know that was a fraudulent transfer? I transfer money all the time. How do they know that it's, they assume it's me because it's my code, it's my password, it's my everything. So again,
I agree with you. I hear what you're saying and I get your point. But why do they credit the amount of $780?
I don't know, Allison. Maybe it slipped through the cracks. Because if you look at the argument they use to deny the dispute, it's the same argument with the $790. So the way I'm looking at it now, it's $2,900 you've been screwed out of instead of $3,600.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much further you can go with this. You can get hold. I would maybe look up on the internet the FDIC and rules for security that the bank has to do. But I'm willing to bet that B of A does everything required under the law and under policy. So I don't know where to go with that. You're defrauded, and it happens all the time. It happens all the time. And the only hope you have is that Bank of America just comes through, or usually on credit card fraud, the credit card companies just eat it up. My card has gotten compromised twice in the last
a couple of years, actually more than that. And people have literally used that card. And whoa, immediately we check, which is why I happen to have a the company I do commercials for, LifeLock. What it does is immediately, if there is something weird, it tells you right there. That's for me protection. Okay. I'm not doing a commercial right now for them right now, but I'm just saying that is one form of protection across the board. And, the other one is, I'm trying to think, no, they just, you know, people just steal numbers. And the credit card companies, I think the reason they make it up and say, okay, is they're scared to tell you how much they lose in fraud. I mean, think of the money that they're made. They make unbelievable amounts of money adding junk fees, et cetera, because they're connected to banks. And they're making so much money, saying, okay, we're going to remove that ding. We're going to remove the amount of money that was taken from you that you owe. And they do. Banking is horrible today. I mean, this whole thing of fraud is almost insurmountable. That's one thing about the internet is it's so destructive. Same time, it's how do you live without it? This is Handle on the Law.